Hello and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier, longer, and happier. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a physician and scientist with over 25 years of experience in patient-centered clinical care. Today's episode is about reaching your longevity potential. By the end of the episode, I'm sure you will no doubt find actionable ways to support your longevity goals. I'm joined by Scott Fulton, who's a unique leader in the aging space. He lectures on aging at two university campuses, is a member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, sits on the prestigious True Health Initiative Council, and is past president of the National Aging in Place Council. He's the author of Wealth Span, More Years, More Moments, More Money. Scott is also an Ironman triathlete and lives with his wife in Charlottesville, Virginia. Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Sharon, thank you so much for having me, and it's great to be with you and your audience.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've been looking forward to this conversation. We have a lot of colleagues in common, and it's nice to be able to get your perspective. So, Scott, let me start by asking you, your perspective on aging, I think, is very unique. And I think you've studied aging from a lot of different perspectives. So, can you tell us how you've arrived at aging as something that you're interested in, the different ways that the paths you've taken have influenced your interest and in your perspective?
Sure. I think like a lot of my colleagues in the looking at aging, there's one common theme I found is that typically their grandmother had a big influence on them, and I would put my hand up to be in that camp too. She was a great role model. One of the stories I tell about her, I think it was in 1967, thereabouts, cherry red Chevy Impala with 327, two-door coupe. Soft top was her car of choice after she sold the farm and moved into a small house in the city, but just had a really positive influence on me in terms of, without realizing, of what active aging can look like. And super independent, and just had a lot of attributes that, and we spent a lot of time together. So that was kind of my first taste of it that kind of planted that seed that grew slowly over, really over the decades. I went into research when I came out of college, and I didn't realize how much of a researcher I was until I found myself there. And it just every year I got more curious. And so like you and our colleagues, I'm more comfortable reading a journal report than I am reading a newspaper. So that's what I'm kind of the one that's noted for. He's always reading these studies, not like a Greger. That's just another whole, he's Olympic level. But so I kind of had my eye on it. I think the other probably big moment at age 40, I kind of looked at my life and looked at myself in the mirror and said, what's happening here? This is not the person that I feel like I would be at age 40. Not that I knew what age 40 was, but it just didn't feel like a fit. And so instead of buying the convertible, I bought a bike and just started to get out doing things and found myself quite by accident and invited to ride with some people who were training for Ironman Lake Placid. I had no idea even what Ironman was at the time. I only discovered how much work it was and how bad it felt to try to do that kind of training initially, but it was really the big awakening for me around my own health. And then kind of going forward, as I spent some years at it and really enjoyed it, but I discovered I had a threshold I couldn't get through, and it wasn't fitness. It was actually gut related. So I'd do a simulation event and swim 3 miles and go bike 100 miles. And at about 10K into the run, I had some gut issues and we were never able to sort it out. So it was only years later that I actually finally figured out kind of what was going on as we started to learn about the microbiome and just how responsive the gut is to the things around our lifestyle choices that caught my attention. And then kind of the next phase was I was back in multinational, top floor of a global corporation doing things that my colleagues would have loved to have my job, and I hated it. And I said, I've got to do something different. And I looked at the aging space. I said, I've been watching this for a long time. I've seen people with lots of money. Some do really well in aging and some really struggle. So it said there's more to money than aging well. So what is it? So I really started to research it. And that was really, I decided to leave corporate and said, I think this is the place where I have something different to give. And that led to starting some work really around aging in place. They started asking me to teach about aging in place. That quickly, I got some doctors involved because I had questions and they were quite willing to help. And that kind of evolved quickly into a longevity course, of which the home environment is one piece of that, of the environment piece. And it just continued to grow and just excite me. And I'm at a point now of I've never been more excited about my career, never had more energy for it, and never found my work to have more purpose than it does now. So it's a massive field, massive opportunity on the individual level, but massive challenges like on the federal level to try to dig ourselves out of the situation we're in. So I kind of am always going between population data and the individual. And I think that's where individuals, and that's why I try to bring it back as best we can do. How does the individual figure out where do I fit in with all of this? Because I'm hearing so much coming at me from, you know, podcasts like this that I'm interested in, but how much of it applies to me? Again, and kind of jumping back, I found myself in my triathlon coach was a former world champion. I found myself in a conversation between he and another coach, the three of us, and that doesn't sound right, but I realized the conversation I missed the first part was about Olympic level athlete. They were talking about getting that last 1%. So it's kind of what I feel like we as consumers are exposed to, but what applies to me? So we hear a lot of people want to go into the drill into the detail around one particular area as though that's the eureka moment. And it might've been for them, but for a lot of people, they're just kind of like, that's interesting. Should I do that? Well, or should I do the next thing? So they're kind of like a ping pong ball bouncing around trying to figure out where to go. So it's fun. It's exciting. It's extremely challenging. And those are the things that I'm drawn to.
And Scott, I love how your lived experience of the pivot and then trying to implement into your own life has also helped shape where you've gone with your career. I think that's the best of all worlds in terms of the perspective that you gain in the work and how you try and communicate the work. As you mentioned, the longevity space has a lot of voices and people have different goals within longevity. How do you frame longevity? Like, what is it for people and why should we strive for it?
Right. So probably it's important to talk about longevity versus lifespan versus health span, kind of all terms that are thrown around that have quite different meanings. And longevity is kind of the most ambiguous of them all. It's kind of the catch-all, but it's one we know, so that's okay. But lifespan is very definitive. It's how many years are we alive? And when everything gets shut off, that's what our lifespan is. Health span is far more elastic. And that's really gets at the elements of how long are we able to do the things that we choose to do? Right. And so I know that we'll say I'm going to live to 95 is just a target number. We'll come back to that, to why that number might be meaningful. At 94, the things I will choose to do will not be the things I choose to do today. So it's not a question of being able to continue everything as it is today, but at the same time, I want to have some sense of independence and ability to care for myself, ability to, you know, the freedom to go out for a walk and enjoy nature and at a pace that I will feel appropriate at that age, and to be, you know, among friends. Those are kind of the things that ultimately describe health span. And so when I kind of talk about it with people, I try to, like, usually in first class, I say, how would you like to die? And really what I'm getting at is not the day of death, but in terms of that last weeks and months and or last year of life, what do you want that to look like? Because that gives us a specific target to work towards that we have lots of influence over. And so this is the engineer, right? How do you reverse engineer? Go find what you like and reverse engineer it. There are all kinds of role models we can look to that have had great lives. So what can we learn from those? That's what I study. Who are the people who are doing well? What's in common amongst them? And what would be the attributes that we could work into our lives to say, because I want what they got. How do I do that? But I can do it my way because I know that there's a million different ways to enjoy health span. So it's really just kind of getting our heads around the number, the chronological age to me is not that important other than it gives us more time for more moments. Because ultimately, if we think about longevity, and the pursuit of it, it's not simply to get another birthday cake. I don't think anybody says that's my goal. My goal is I want to be there for the moment of whatever. Is that a grandchild graduating college? Is it a great-grandchild being born? Is it some specific moment that you know where you were when it happened? And those are really the things that we measure time by, from moment to moment. The time in between just gets lost. I don't remember what I did most of the last hour, let alone most of yesterday, but I can probably choose specific moments very easily that will stay with us. So that's really the pursuit of moments. That's the magic, I think, of longevity that most of us are trying to pursue.
I think that perspective is such an important one. I think so often in healthcare, we assume that everyone wants to live longer and live healthier, but we don't often ask people why they would want to, right? What motivates them? And the way you framed it is, we want moments, right? So it's not the time, but the moments. I'm going to read a quote from your book that really resonated about this. If our time mostly comes down to opportunities for moments, and we view moments as the measures of one's life, then a purposeful investment in personal longevity helps create the time and space for more moments. I think that is so key, right? I mean, it just reframes the measurement of time.
And I'll tell you, that was a chapter I never intended to write. It was never in the outline, but I found myself, you know, in the thought process of writing and realized that's really that's at the core of all of this. And so as the engineer who wants to measure everything that I possibly can, I'm actually suggesting of the one thing that we can measure, we really don't do a very good job of, because we're measuring all the things associated with time, but not really the significance of time. When I teach, that's the beauty of teaching in person, is that opportunity to connect with your students. And with a patient, the same thing, right? It's that connection that suddenly, that's the moment that we were all waiting for, and now suddenly they take off. And so it's really only about moments. And if you get those great moments and you live a short life, but you lived a great life, the great life will be not measured by the value of your car or the size of your house. They're going to be measured by the value of the impact that you had on those you touched.
If anyone has spent time with a loved one who has passed away in those few final days, every person that's been close to me that I've lost has spoken about just memories and moments. I mean, that's really what comes back as, you know, how people view a life well lived. So it's just a fascinating way to view this. So making moments our goal, how do we increase moments?
So the approach I found myself, again, this was the researcher's approach. I went in with the, as you always would in research, without particular biases or particular training. So it was pure research to go in and say, you know, I didn't have anybody telling me what to do. And really where I landed was, I remember Dr. Dave Donahue, which he's an ACLM colleague. I remember we sat down some time ago and he said, yeah, those are all kind of the things that we figured out a while ago. We expressed them maybe a little bit differently, but generally it's around establishing a foundation. Just like we're going to build a house, well, it only is as good as the foundation that we put under it. And those foundations really come down to five key pads, or I'm not so big on pillars, I like foundations. So one is the mind, both in terms of attitude, like how do we approach the world? How do we approach our place in the world? What's our attitude around our own health, around others, around our objectives? And how do we care for our physical mind, our brain? So those all kind of fit into the mind foundation. The next one is E is for environment. And I touched on that earlier. There's environment's really two aspects. There's the external environment that we're exposed to that generally comes at us, that's kind of hard to manage our exposure, but we can perhaps manage it by where we live or how we spend our time. One of them, making sure we do get outside, assuming we live in a reasonably clean environment. And then the home environment, that's an aging in place. If there's a gap that almost everyone has, is their home was built for a young family. Everything in medicine is changing to start to bring the hospital into the home. remote patient monitoring is just beginning to really appear. That's going to be huge. We're going to essentially stop building more hospitals, and we're going to start providing hospital care more in the home, which means you as a listener will be at home much longer than you might have thought. And so our home needs to be designed to support that for later years. Diet is one everybody loves to get into, and I really reduce diet down to quality, variety, and make sure you've got lots of fiber. And if you're taking care of quality and variety and fiber, essentially you will find yourself within a diet structure that's easy to manage, easy to follow. And then if you want to tune it a little bit from there because you've got some specific health biomarkers that you need to address, you've got a good foundation to work from. And then the other is activity, which most people think of as exercise, but it's really how active you are over the course of a day, over the course of a week, kind of that repetitious movement that provides benefit in different levels. And then the final one in MEDAC is C for community. And that's really the sense of belonging, because we all need to belong to something. And generally, we need to feel a belonging to communities to feel that we matter. And that's particularly important, again, practically, so that we're in community when we're aging, because when we get older, one of our key risks is isolation. And so we've got to develop habits of being in and integrating ourselves into community all the way through life, so we don't kind of think we're going to decide to pick that up when we're 80 because now it's a good idea. So it's mind, environment, diet, activity, and community are really the five foundations. Longevity or health span pretty much takes care of itself. So if we're focused on doing the right habits around those things, we'll ultimately get some outcomes that will naturally just occur.
And I think having those foundational, you know, ways to approach longevity is really helpful, because the way you've just described it seems very accessible. It seems very practical. In this country, we've also seen life expectancy, which is not the same as lifespan, but we've seen that decline. How can people kind of change the curve for themselves, right? And kind of make progress towards these goals? Because it seems like on one level, there should be things that we can do. And yet, as a country, we're really struggling.
Yeah. So if I, again, I'm a numbers guy. I like to put everything into charts because that's what engineers do. So part of the research for the book was I went back and traced back mortality data back to 1933. When the U.S. really started to track this. And I'm always looking at health trends that are happening. And that was part of it. I got pulled in COVID to talk about what's happening to these other diseases as associated with pandemics, for example. But generally, for most people, so when we talk about lifespans, if we say what's the median lifespan, which is the average that people can think about, anyone who's interested is interested in doing more better than the average. And so I kind of say, what I set for a target would be about the 90th percentile, the top 10% of the population. And the reason I choose that isn't arbitrary. It's very thought out, because it's only genetics that starts to kick in at about in our mid-90s, give or take. So we should all be able to get to about 90%, barring all the normal circumstances, without requiring longevity genetics. So we know, for example, genetics and longevity have been under test for many years, and we now think that longevity genetics factors in about 15%. The rest of it is lifestyle. I've seen as low as 7%. I think that's probably optimistic, but we've seen it steadily come down, which says a lot of that is in our control. And what the control is our epigenome. And the way I describe genetics simply for people is, think about a piano. The keys of the piano are genes that are turned on or turned off. Okay, they're expressed or they're methylated. Our epigenome is like the music or the playing of the keys. And so in kindergarten, if I tried to play the piano, it would sound very different than if I had 20 years of piano practice. And so that's the music. So we're trying to develop the art of playing the piano, and that's the art of playing our genes. And that's what lifestyle medicine is about, is the art of playing our genes to maximize the quality of the music of life that we all enjoy. And so that, for most people, will to get to 90th percentile nominally, there's all sorts of other, we can break it down many ways, but nominally for a man, that's going to be about age 93. And for a woman, that's going to be age 95. So to put that into other context, for a 60-year-old, that's going to mean more than a decade of extra healthy years and about 40% more years. So for a 60-year-old looking at their life forward saying, are you telling me I can get 40% more healthy years? And I'm saying, yes, if you adopt these lifestyle habits that I'm sure you talk about frequently on your show and with your patients, that's the opportunity that's here. And it's by and large free. I kind of say on the investment side, you find me an investment that has a bigger return than that, and I'll be all over it. But I talk to investors all the time, and that's just not the way the market works.
And Scott, you know, the diet and activity, I think there's a tremendous amount of focus on the mind and the community component. I think there's less emphasis on people connecting that with health and longevity. Let's dive a little bit more into those aspects. So you started talking about them, but if you could speak some more to them.
Sure. So I kind of talk about in the book, I use the hand and the mind is the thumb, and the other four, environment, diet, activity, and community, are the other fingers. So the mind's kind of the opposing digit to kind of counter all those. And they are all interdependent, but the mind really sets the attitude. And attitude is huge. So of things that we know, so a positive attitude towards life, right? And I think we've all probably heard a lot about the power of gratitude. Well, it's real. There's lots of studies that support it. But also in terms of the chemistry of the body is influenced by it. It's not simply a good fortune or that good luck comes because you're a more positive person. No, it actually changes your body chemistry. And that's kind of going back to what is aging. And aging is, the way I describe it to people, is it's the loss of signal strength. So in the signal strength, because of all the signaling systems in our body, everything in our body is a functional system that requires messaging of signals from one part in our body to another, some action that's required and a reaction. As those signals start to weaken, the body's ability to function starts to decline, and we put more and more load on the repair mechanisms that our body has. And so everything about attitude is generally around helping to restore those levels, essentially keep our bodies functioning more efficiently, but it's also going to help us manage stress. And I would say the one aspect of mind that people struggle with is stress management tools. Some people are naturally good at it, some aren't. If there was a place you wanted to work on mind to say, yeah, I'd like to reduce stress, don't look for stress to go away. Look for tools to manage stress. Like everything, you will make better decisions once you understand and have some tools at your hand. Just going running and just eating great food. I remember Dean Ornish commenting on this once, like, we can do everything to try to make all the lifestyle choices, but if we don't address stress, we probably are not going to see much impact. It's the hardest one to talk about in medicine because we don't have good ways to measure it and good ways to, I can't give you a pill to make you stress less. That would be the ultimate pill for medicine, perhaps, but we can numb the effects of stress, perhaps. But generally, thinking about stress, I think, is a great way. And it kind of ties right in with community, right? So if we are lonely, by being lonely, we will naturally be carrying more stress. And we talk about chronic stress. So I'll kind of use my Ironman experience. I didn't realize how tired I was after my first Ironman until weeks later, when I finally got my energy back, because we get in a state of chronic stress or chronic fatigue. Not in chronic fatigue as a disease, but just the wear and tear of life. We forget what being energized and engaged feels like because we've just kind of dialed everything down. And when you find yourself in community and now you suddenly, these people are interested in what I have to say. We see everybody's come home. I met so-and-so. Well, the reason you want to tell it is because usually they were interested in something you had to say. And so community serves a really strong validation. And that's really the community that, like what we do here, is important to fill the gaps. But there's never a substitute for community in person. That's really, and with multiple people. That's one of the things. So pickleball, why is pickleball so popular and so well supported? It is the ultimate sport for people because there's community that you get to just go join a community. You don't have to start it. Go join it. It's got activity associated with it. It challenges the body in terms of the all the motor skills and the mind activity associated with moving in space. Unlike running or any other sport you can think of, it may not be as stressful on the body in some ways, but it's so beautifully balanced. That's where its power comes from. So it's really, you know, when I think about all of them, mind, environment, diet, activity, and community, people always ask me, well, which one's the most important? I said, they're all important because if you drop any one of them, they'll pull the other four down. That's just, they're all interdependent. And so that's really the mind's job is to try to measure and monitor that balance. Say, what am I hyperactive around? A classic one might be diet. And I'm so busy reading and preaching about diet that I don't spend any time with people because they don't seem to want to spend time with me. I don't know why. That might be an indication of we're a little too focused on our diet and we're missing out on some other things. Diet's great. Eat well. I'm not saying, you know, that you want to go eat junk food, but at the same time, when the balance is off, the mind will tell us if we're willing to listen.
I think the balance and interdependence between the hand model that you mentioned, between the mind, environment, diet, activity, and community is so important. As you're talking, I'm thinking about even the relationship between stress and community, because loneliness is essentially a form of chronic stress on our body that activates our hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis and actually damages our mitochondria, causes mitochondrial dysfunction. So at a cellular level, there's such a connection between stress and loneliness. And it, you know, speaks, like you have just said, to the foundation of what we need to increase our health span and our lifespan. So this balance and not trying to overdo, or not, you can't really overdo, but not overly emphasize any one aspect of all these components, I think is really important.
Yeah, the pursuit of perfection is really problematic for people, right? Balance is, you're never perfectly in balance, but for a fleeting moment. Enjoy it while it's there because it's not going to last. And that's okay. It's not supposed to. You're always essentially trying to adjust and essentially raise your game, right? That's the beautiful thing of aging is so long as you continue to learn, you can continue to raise your game.
Another thing I really enjoyed about your book, Scott, is that, as you mentioned, we are spending a lot of money into living longer into our healthcare system and trying to extend life. And really, you mentioned that a longer, healthier life isn't tied to our healthcare expenditure, right? And I think we think so much that we have this amazing healthcare capability in this country, yet we don't have the life expectancy of a lot of developed countries. But reframing it as maybe more spending isn't our way out of this, really, I love, because it tells people, at least it tells me and hopefully our listeners, that you need to do this. Don't wait for the healthcare system. Don't wait for some structured approach or someone to tell you you need to do this.
Yeah, you know, you could go down to just one of the simplest things would be getting an annual physical is a great utilization of the system, but just going there isn't enough, right? So get the labs done. And really, I talk in the book about physician-patient partnership. Do your homework, show up, engage your physician in an intelligent conversation about your health. The more informed you are, I can guarantee the better the conversation is going to be. And that will also probably help you ask and maybe get some additional labs that may not have been done, because doctor isn't looking for problems. They're looking to do a high-level check to make sure and track. But there's also, if you can handle more data, that's what doctors are fearful of, is causing anxiety by ordering extra labs like as though there's something wrong. No, generally curious. Understand what those labs are. Take some time to research them. Don't get hyper-focused on them, again, in balance, and then start to just track them over time. That's easy for us to do and start to, as we go forward, we don't have to understand it all at once, but as we start to understand what's changing over the course of life, we'll be able to have better conversations and we'll go for the next appointment. we'll be able to ask the physician, I've noticed this number here seems high and you didn't say anything. Can you tell me about that? Right? There's probably a good reason why the physician had that decision. They made a decision, right? Around what things they wanted to engage you on and whatnot. And you'll find you'll start to feel much more comfortable around your health. Like, we don't get in the car to go anywhere without getting our GPS to tell us every turn to go on the way. So any notions that we can't handle data is ridiculous in this day and age. It's just getting familiar with it, getting over that initial period of, you know, the first time we got a smartphone, it's like, which button do I press, right? It's the same with health data. We don't have to arrive at the finish line in perfect shape. That's not the goal, right? You're not 95 in a showroom condition, but we want to be able to drive around the block and enjoy the car well into our later years. And so we need to be kind of managing the regular maintenance on our bodies in the same way and monitoring how it's doing. Is the fuel gauge getting low? Well, we need to top it up.
I think that's great. And Scott, with the time you have left, what advice would you give our listeners? Just key things that they should just remember and hopefully implement.
One of the most valuable things people can do is really kind of just stop and say, what's the end game for me? What is my life plan? Like when it kind of all goes away and kids are growing up perhaps, and what is it I'm after here? What was I put on this planet for? And really kind of get as specific as you can around that, mainly to kind of parse away the noise. And then it starts to say, are my habits in support of that, or am I kind of just partway there? Again, none of us are perfect, but what we usually find is we start to learn more about ourselves and our actions. We realize we're not doing some of the things that would be easily done just if we only knew that there was a connection between the things that I do will have a direct impact on my body. And so I just find just getting in touch with the end game is really important for people. We all are used to living in the moment. We're not trained to do the end game thought process. But when you start making choices based on long-term outcomes, small choices start to get really easy and obvious for us. It's just a different way of looking at it. And then it's really, so how do I measure myself along that trajectory? Am I making progress? And that's, again, I mentioned things like labs, but there's things that you can do. On a couple of my websites, I've got things you can get, like your biological age. That'll give you an indication of how am I tracking on my age relative to my chronological age. Not that it's the most reliable thing in the world, but it's one of many, many metrics that you can use to kind of reinforce I'm making progress. I can come back and measure it later. And that's really the key of measuring, is it provides reference point to look back to say, oh, I'm getting better. I didn't think I could get better in this. Look at this. And now that becomes motivation to do more. And if you don't measure, you're missing out on tremendous opportunity for motivation.
Absolutely. And for people listening, Scott's book, Wealthspan, is absolutely wonderful. More years, more moments, more money. And Scott, for people who want to find you and learn more, where can they find you?
So we've got a few websites. The main one probably for here would be just to go to Wealthspan. And Wealthspan is with a health span with a W in front. So we're kind of playing with wealth, health, and lifespan. It's really the fusion of those three concepts, which I call would be, you know, it's winning the triple crown, because that's really what people ideally would be after. So wealth, health, and lifespan gets you to Wealthspan. I've got some courses coming up that I'm going to start to bring to the public. I was planning to do it years ago, but life got in the way with doing lots of other things. But I've got some motivation with some other people that have asked if they could be part of it. So the social, the community aspects now come into that. So now I'm excited to go forward with it. So I enjoy engaging with people, and anything you'd like to do. I like to do work with groups, and certainly corporations are really where we're trying to change the trajectory there as well, because in the workplace has a huge impact on worker attendance and output.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott, thank you so much. Thanks for all the work that you do, and thank you for joining us and all the great information that you shared.
Oh, thanks, Sharon. It's great to be on here. Great for the work that you do. I'm always motivated whenever I run into another doctor doing great work. So thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.